Street View Podcast is part of the Dallas Public Library's Homeless Engagement Initiative, dedicated to increasing community awareness of issues related to homelessness. The opinions expressed are solely those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Dallas Public Library or the City of Dallas.
How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? You got it all figured out, straight from your cube. Life's a musical, maybe a carousel. How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? Perception starts with selection. The same streets you walk on, they carry their own view. This is Street View.
Father God in heaven, we come now in the name of Jesus Christ. We come not trying to be boastful or bashful, God. We actually come in confidence, God, but being humble. We thank you for your time. We thank you for what you have done for us. We walk. We talk. We breathe. I always say that because I can't do it on my own, and you allow it to happen daily, God. I'm not doing this for show. We're doing this as a team so that others might be able to believe in themselves and believe that helping one another is beneficial as a whole, as a community, as an environment. We look toward you, God, so that we might be able to know what exactly you would have us to do. It's in Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen. How y'all doing today? Rashad Anthony Dickerson here. I have got to tell you, I've been through some things in my life. One of the biggest things that plagues homeless individuals is taking care of themselves. Homeless individuals sometimes don't recognize how important health is and health care. It's been a major issue in the news for the last couple of months or so. Being honest with you, I'm kind of ignorant to the situation, meaning the Affordable Care Act, certain policies and procedures that we utilize. And one of the things is because of education, but another thing is because I'm homeless and I really don't have those type of things to worry about. There are other necessities that I need to get to, and getting to those necessities won't happen if I don't take care of my health. So today on the show, we have Dr. Susan Spaulding from the Parkland Hospital Homes Program. Dr. Sue, would you please kindly introduce yourself and give the people just some background about who you are and how long you've worked at Parkland?
I'm Susan Spaulding, known as Doc Sue to some of the area shelters. I've worked at Parkland as the medical director for the homeless services for 21 years. And I am also a pediatrician.
Really? You like kids?
I love kids.
Well, you say with the homeless program up at Parkland, what does that entail?
Well, so the homeless program is known by its acronym HOMES, or it stands for Homeless Outreach Medical Services Program, and it is the outpatient services or the community services that Parkland provides to homeless people of all ages in Dallas County. Some listeners may know of the larger health centers that Parkland operates throughout the community. There's the Blue Flowers Health Center in DeHaro and the East Dallas Health Center. And those health centers provide comprehensive, what we call primary care, health care for people in their neighborhood, all of all ages. And so the goal of the HOMES program is to provide those exact same services, not in a particular neighborhood, but to a particular group of people that don't have any homes.
You guys also have a bus, right? Like, I see it sometimes.
You do see it. We actually have four, soon by the middle of this month or so, five, what we call mobile medical clinics. It sounds much more important than a bus.
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
They're big and blue, and they say HOMES on the side of them. In addition to that, we have one that is a mobile dental clinic.
A mobile dental clinic?
Correct. And so we use those mobile medical clinics to serve 26 sites throughout Dallas County where homeless people congregate. That's in addition to our regular Monday through Friday clinics that we hold at both the Stew Pot and the Bridge.
Oh, you hold clinics at Stew Pot and Bridge? Is there
Correct.
Anywhere else you guys hold clinics?
Just those are the only two in a building kind of clinics. The rest are on the mobile medical clinics.
Cool, cool. And the 26 locations you guys have?
Well, you don't want me to list them all.
No.
But they're shelters, some of the largest shelters that a lot of people have heard of, Dallas Life, Austin Street. Those large shelters, they're domestic violence shelters, they're shelters that are for teenagers, there are places like the homeless daycare, the Vogel Alcove, places where homeless people would get services, where there's a large enough congregation of homeless people that we can actually provide health care. We can't just pull up on a street corner and expect to have enough homeless people that need health care. We need to go where there's a large group of them that we can offer our services to.
And you say your services. I want to ask the question, so how does the Homes program fit in with the overall mission of Parkland?
Parkland, being the hospital district for Dallas County, is charged by the state to provide comprehensive, high-quality health care for the citizens of Dallas County. And it has such a wide range of services. Many people talk about that our services are for poor and uninsured, but of course we all know that if you're in a burn or if you're in a major car accident, Parkland is the likely place that you will go and get care. Parkland offers a full range of services, but its underlying mission is to make sure that health care is provided to everybody in Dallas County.
So what about the homeless and the homeless program? Are there unique issues that you deal with when you deal with homeless individuals as opposed to those who have homes?
Well, a lot of times people ask about health care issues that homeless people have. And really, homeless people have the same health care issues that everybody else in this country faces. They have high blood pressure, they have diabetes, they have heart disease, they're overweight, they don't exercise enough. All of those kinds of issues are the most common issues that we see. What's different is that homeless people typically, at least in Texas, don't have health insurance. And so that a lot of times, access to health care is a huge issue and the problems are much worse than when they first seek health care than they normally are in somebody that might have insurance.
So what you're saying in essence is, so say an individual has a health problem, he takes a longer time to actually maybe muster up the courage to come see you guys.
Exactly.
I got a confession.
Uh-oh.
I mean, for about 5 days now, my kidneys have been hurting. And yesterday, I mean, I just literally drank water all day and they're still hurting. So I'm thinking, well, maybe I'm flushing my system. I'm thinking maybe cranberry juice, but I can't buy cranberry juice. My scratch is not up to par. So
Perhaps.
I agree with you.
Perhaps seeking health care after this show would be an excellent idea. Both the Bridge and the Stew Pot are waiting to have you walk in and provide high-quality care for you.
You said that the homeless didn't generally have health care. What's the deal with that?
The health care provisions for indigent people are different between all the different states. And so in some states, single adults who make a low enough income qualify for Medicaid. That's not true in Texas in general. Certainly pregnant women qualify for Medicaid. But if you're, say, a single adult like yourself who doesn't have any major health problems, even if you had absolutely no income, there is no provision for health insurance for you. And one of the facets of the affordable health care, the idea was that states would all increase their Medicaid to cover poor single adults. And that was something that the state of Texas chose not to participate in. And so that is why affordable health care really has not made any change or any difference in the population that I look after and my program looks after, because they just don't qualify for affordable health care.
Some of the resources that I've known about as far as Parkland is, you guys have an AIDS and HIV building. I've been there. You guys offer free testing. I think that's a valuable resource.
In fact, at almost any place that you access Parkland, any of the community health centers, the emergency room, the subspecialty clinics, you can get HIV testing done. It used to be, when we first had HIV testing available, it was a very big, cumbersome project. You had to give consent for that particular blood test, and then we would be very careful with how we released it. We're much looser now. We routinely, when we draw blood, for any variety of reasons, checking your diabetes, checking your kidneys, checking your cholesterol, we'll just throw in an HIV test if you haven't had one in the last year as part of routine screening. And I think that most clinics across the country are following that practice now. And what you talk about is, yes, there are many ways to come into Parkland. Probably most famous way is the emergency room. And that's one of the things that we're trying to change the culture. We want the emergency room to be for true emergencies and not for people that don't have doctors. So the heart attacks and the car accidents go there and they get fast, efficient, high-quality service. But the people that are suffering from colds and flus and headaches and, you know, minor other problems that we all as physicians know how to care for, we hope that they can go to a regular doctor, either at one of our community locations. You did mention that the medicine services does have a clinic on the main campus. It does the same kinds of things as the clinics do in the communities. We hope that the community clinics are where they are on DART stops so that they're accessible to the community so that people can walk to them, easily drive to them, take public transportation, and make it easier because we know transportation is a big barrier to accessing healthcare.
What's up, y'all? How y'all doing? We back. We back on the show with Sue Spaulding. We also have the co-hosts, Miss Jasmine Afrikawala Kallenberg. It's good to have everybody here at the same time so we could actually look at this in a depth. I mean, I can see it from my point of view, but Jasmine has a lot of different things and opinions that bring up valid points.
Dr. Spaulding, I'm wondering, it seems like there's a lot of really great services out there for the homeless. And I mean, what has been the response from the homeless community? Do you feel like the services, I mean, we're talking 4, soon to be 5 mobile units, 2 clinics specifically geared to the homeless population. Do you feel like those are being properly utilized? And if not, why?
I do in general think that our services are well utilized. And I think that there's an additional need. We do get calls from agencies asking us to provide services at their locations, and we haven't been able to fulfill all of those needs. One of the things that we haven't been able to fully address is the need for what I call primary health care. So those are the regular checkups, the immunizations, the cancer screenings that I think are so important as a regular physician. Those are so important. I'm a pediatrician, and most of the families who bring their children to see me bring them because their children are sick. They don't bring them because they say, oh, my 3-year-old hasn't had a checkup in a year and he's due. They say, you know, look at this rash, or he's been throwing up. And then when I say, when was the last time he had a regular checkup, that's when they say, well, it's been a long time, or I don't remember, or when he turned 1, or the last time he had shots. And so that's one thing I wish. I know parents are extremely busy, and we try to make healthcare as easy as possible. So we bring those big blue mobile clinics right up to the outside of the shelter. So all you have to do is pile out in the evening or pile out in the afternoon, and we'll be glad to do a comprehensive checkup for your child. Same with adults. Most of the adults come in because of something that's bothering them. They don't usually come in and say, you know, I haven't had my pap smear done in the last year. I need my pap smear done. Or I'm worried about colon cancer screening. They more say, hey, what about this wound I have on my arm? Or I've been coughing for the last week.
Right.
Those
or
are
rash,
the reasons.
Anything.
Any of those things.
And I totally agree. Like I spoke about the HIV and AIDS tests. I usually don't take one until I hear about it. And when I hear about it, it's like, oh, I'm good. And then I'm like, I don't think about it again to come see you guys.
Well, that's why we do. We realize people don't think about those things. And so when we have you, we try to throw in as many extra tests that you might have missed in the last year or two, check your cholesterol or something that you wouldn't think to check, but we know is important to check.
Well, and I have a question about the shelters, the shelter environment. I would think that if you have hundreds of men and women all sleeping on mats in this shelter environment, that health would probably be a big concern of even the shelters, and just making sure that there's, I would think that there's a lot of opportunity to contract different illnesses in that environment.
One of the things I saw as an outbreak was tuberculosis. Tuberculosis began to be something so, there was an outbreak, and it became so stressful that the bridge actually kicked me out once, because it's like, we're taking TB shots. Okay, you're doing TB shots. What do you need to draw blood for? And I'm like, well, I'm not drawing blood, homie. You're not finna just stick me and take my blood for no reason. And I couldn't understand it, but tuberculosis is something really, really fierce. And just like Jasmine said, that's one of the issues that homeless people or individuals deal with. So how do you guys go about treating that?
Well, I guess to go back to Jasmine's point, that when you live in a large group, you do share various illnesses, so that when you have an outbreak of a cold or the flu, those things travel quickly from one person to another. And that's why in the fall, we spend a lot of time trying to get as many people to take the flu shot as we possibly can. I will say, until the media jumps in and says, oh, people have died, usually people, big guys who have tattoos, say, oh no, I don't like needles. So we have trouble selling the flu shot to people, but we keep trying. It's one of the most important things to keep contagious diseases from flowing within the shelter system. And then scabies and, to a lesser extent, lice are another thing that people spread from one to another, especially when they're sharing bedding and that kind of thing. And then most serious of the, or at least one of the most serious of the diseases that people spread from one to another, is tuberculosis. And usually you have to have prolonged or extensive contact with somebody who's coughing up the tuberculosis germ. But we do know that a lot of times people don't know they have tuberculosis. They're sleeping close to other people and coughing all night long and spreading tuberculosis. The Bridge and some other locations, and our clinics included, have switched from the TB test. Well, there's a couple of ways to test for tuberculosis. There's a TB test where you place it and then you ask somebody to come back in 2 days and see if you have a bubble on your arm. Well,
traditional,
and yes, great, but getting people to come back in 2 days has not always been all that easy. So we really like the blood test, because you draw the blood and they don't have to come back in 2 days, and most of the blood samples are negative. But the few that are positive, then we can spend our time trying to find that person. And then ultimately what we do is a chest x-ray to see if there's signs of pneumonia. And we're fortunate that the health department is involved in the treatment of the most people, although some people have to spend 2 weeks in Parkland prior to coming out and being treated by the health department. Tuberculosis is a really serious disease, really difficult to treat. You have to treat it for a long time, usually 6 months to a year, and often with multiple medicines. So we need to take it very seriously, and I am pleased that the Bridge was aggressively asking people to be tested.
Yeah, they kicked me out. They meant that. They meant that. They was, you going to take this TB test home, and no, you're not finna stick me. What
but
other?
You're a big, strong guy.
Yeah, no tattoos, though.
What other diseases or illnesses are common spread amongst the homeless outside of TB and the others that you named? Hypothermia, something like that?
Well, I think a lot of times people think about hypothermia. It's not as much of a problem as it is in more northern cities. And our shelters are very good about, when we have very cold temperatures, and especially when there's any kind of precipitation, the shelters open up and overflow capacity, bring people inside. The police are very good about looking for people that are outside and shouldn't be, and helping them get inside. So fortunately, that's not as much of an issue. I think what we see the most is people getting dehydrated. They're out. Maybe they're working a roofing job or something that puts you at a high risk in the hot summer heat, and you don't have enough beverages with you, and you do get dehydrated. So that's a much bigger problem in Texas.
Well, Dr. Spalding, I know that you mentioned that in Texas that hypothermia is not as big of an issue as it is in some of the more northern states, but I know in Dallas we had several below freezing days this past winter, and I know that for the library and in our homeless engagement and working more with the homeless, I think it became we were all very much more aware of, oh no, you know, we have a lot of our regular customers who don't stay in shelters and they have their own encampments. And it's below freezing. And I remember sleeping at night in my warm bed with my heater on, thinking, where is so-and-so tonight? I know he's got a sleeping bag and he says he's fine, but I think the reality is because it's not as much of an issue here in Dallas normally, I don't know that all our homeless people are as prepared for below freezing temperatures.
Well, I think that it takes not only agencies like the police department and the library and the shelters, but I think other homeless people to help people understand the importance of coming inside. So that one of the big problems with coming inside is that you have to participate in certain number of rules, and you also can't drink alcohol or use drugs when you come inside. And so some people are reluctant to do that for those reasons. Some people are reluctant to come inside potentially because of some mental illnesses they have or fears and concerns that they have. I think the biggest issue is that people drink alcohol, and alcohol makes you feel warm inside and makes you at a greater risk for hypothermia.
Really?
And so those are the people that the police really worry about, especially people that have drunk enough alcohol to pass out. You really want to pull those people in because they don't have the mechanism to wake up to realize that they're losing serious amounts of heat. And I don't see it as much in here as I did in Chicago, but when it's cold, people tend to sleep on heating vents, and that heat typically is a moist heat, so that your clothes, whatever you have wrapped around you to keep warm, becomes wet. And so then when you're wet and you're cold, you're more at risk for doing serious damage to your extremities, your feet primarily. Homeless people don't have hats and gloves and big heavy jackets and sleeping bags that are rated for freezing temperatures. And so that when all of a sudden our crazy weather goes from something warm and pleasant to suddenly becoming very cold.
Welcome to Texas.
It is welcome to Texas. And I think that if you're not listening to the news and the weather channels, you might be totally unprepared. And so that's why I think everybody as a community needs to work together to make sure that people are not caught unexpectedly out in the cold.
One of the mornings that we opened early and served some coffee for some of the people who'd either come out of shelters or, you know, off the streets when it was freezing, we were just hanging out, having some coffee, and we were just talking, and one of the guys asked, "Where did you drive from?" And I live up north, and he was just very concerned about me driving and the conditions out there. And I thought, "You're the one who just, you know, slept on the street and you're worried about me." And it was several of them, and they were like, "Oh, well, you be careful driving home, and I hope they let you leave early." And it was just moments like that where you realize, wow, like, these are really just genuine people, and that here I am so concerned about them and they're concerned about me driving.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Ms. Sue about us working together as a community, as a whole, to help each other out. Just like Jasmine said, there are more things that the homeless could actually offer than people recognize or realize, a consideration and a concern. And thank you guys, everybody here, for actually taking consideration upon the homeless, because we have to get the basic necessities and the basic needs, and you guys all contribute to that. I'm grateful, to be honest.
Rashad, what is the best way to communicate this kind of information among the homeless? I know that people have asked us, you know, how do you guys connect with your customers and how does this work? And I wonder, within the homeless community, like, how do you get that information out? How do you spread the word?
The best way to do anything nowadays is actually grassroots. I myself go around Dallas and tell individuals about resources. That's what got me where I am. If you remember the first show, if you remember how we met, that's the best way to do it. Because even at school right now, I got on the chair the other day, because the way we publicize things via email, it's not really effective. I'm not an avid reader. So an email is not, it's one, it's impersonal to me. Two, if I'm busy or I'm trying to stay in the age of technology, I'm homeless and I don't have the gizmos and the gadgets that everybody else has, I have to be in a place where rules are set that I could utilize the electronics, which is why the library is so accessible to the homeless and one of our favorite places to go. But the best way to communicate is through grassroots. I like the podcast, But then again, when I leave from this mic, I have to go and preach the podcast to people because they may not have the gizmos and the gadgets in the shelter. So I got to go over there and say, hey, go to streetviewpodcast.com, or I got to go over there with the podcast so that individuals can hear. That's one of the best ways to do things. One of the reasons I like having people on the show from different agencies is resources.
Well, and I think, Rashad, one of the important things is a lot of times people don't trust agencies that they don't know, or why would you trust me? You don't know me. But somebody who has been homeless or is homeless and knows something and tells it to another person that's homeless, I think has a lot of credibility. If you can say, hey, I've been to this clinic and they're cool, then somebody else is going to say, well, maybe I'll try them out. And so that, I think that word of mouth, and if you really say, hey, you got to come in tonight because it's really going to be bad tonight and I'm worried about you, just come in to this one night, it'll be okay, then I think that that's more approachable than perhaps if a police officer came and said, hey, we're worried about you, you need to come in. One of the things that I try to make people aware is that for the most part, all of our clinics are open to anybody that's homeless in Dallas County. Some clinics are very busy and it's hard to get in. A few of them, domestic violence shelter clinics, are closed because those are supposed to be confidential locations. So we don't advertise that. So what I usually tell people is, if you need to get in and you can't get, the Stewpot is my favorite clinic because it really will take anybody in. And if you're homeless, you can get into our clinic. And if we can't see you today, we can definitely see you tomorrow. And so that's my go-to location. It's open Monday through Friday mornings and then Monday through Thursday afternoons. On Mondays, we have the foot doctor there and the eyeglasses clinic. The rest of the time is a medical clinic. But we have, because we talked about, we have these 28 locations and the hours and when and where and all that is always crazy. I would say the two resources, one, if you can call our main office, which is 214-590-0153, people can give you up to the minute times. We can, it's certainly people who have just come out of the hospital who need to be seen on a special time, or anybody that has something special that needs to be in a time. We occasionally make appointments for those people. Most of the time we'll walk in, but we can tell you, hey, the Stewpot's really pretty busy Tuesday mornings, but come and check us out on Tuesday afternoons. We usually have plenty of open slots. That kind of information we can provide. And then if you ever see one of our blue mobile clinics or go to the Stewpot or the Bridge, you can ask somebody there, where's the best place? When can I be seen at Austin Street?
That so it's friendly. It's friendly to walk up to one of the clinics. It's just like, yo, I'm looking at a mobile clinic. It's got homes on the side of it. And I go, I'm having an issue. It's cool for me to walk in.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you come Thursday night when I'm at Family Gateway, they'll say, oh, Rashad, you know, we have a pediatrician on board, but why don't you go around the block to the Stewpot tomorrow morning and they'll get you seen. So occasionally, like tonight, you're too old for me, and so I can't see you, but if you had a little person, I'd be glad to see the little person.
No sucker, no Band-Aid tonight.
I'm really intrigued by the specialization you mentioned. I know that Stewpot had a dentist clinic, and then eye clinic. I understand foot clinic. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, homeless people spend an awful lot of time on their feet.
Yes, they do.
And then we also have a large number of diabetic patients. Mm. And then I'm gonna guess that nail clippers are not the most common thing if you looked in everybody's homeless bags. So there's just a lot of feet issues, and we have a podiatrist who works both at the Stewpot and at the Bridge to look after a variety of foot conditions, and it's just one of the extra services that we have. We also have a dietitian, helps with people who have diabetes, who are overweight, whose cholesterol is too high. For me, she mostly sees children who aren't getting enough iron in their diets. which is really important for your brain development. So we work on that a lot. We have social workers. We have substance abuse counselor. We have smoking cessation. We have psychologists. So we have a variety of people to help us in addition to the sort of core medical problems, because really in almost anybody that you see, there's, and I'm going to say especially in the homeless population, there's a behavioral component that goes along with the medical component.
Absolutely.
And so we really need to address both of those.
As a matter of fact, I want to give a quick note to Neil over up there at the stew pot. Neil is a peer specialist. He does the cessation class and also the substance abuse class. Neil is a really great peer and also a really great licensed
chemical dependency counselor.
Chemical dependency. This guy is awesome. He's one of the guys who actually takes his time and sits down with you, just like we're doing here now. We'll give you some good insight and help. He's one of the people that will help, one of the places you can get positive reinforcement if you're actually on the streets trying to do something. Generally, all service providers deal with a time, a specific time, first of the month. And it's funny, people really don't mention this, but at the first of the month, a lot of individuals who deal with substance abuse and also who deal with Social Security and SSDI disabilities, they get a large sum of money. When they get this sum of money, they're not always productive with it. And that's just saying, oh, they're not. That's just a generalization. But the individuals from that substance could probably turn their lives in a different direction. And substance abuse is a major issue when you think about homelessness. Yes, it is part of the stigma that people see all the time. But a lot of times, like you said, the mental component of an individual goes along with the physical component.
So Dr. Spalding, how are the doctors who work with the homeless outreach team, how are they sort of selected, and what kind of specialized training do they get working with the homeless population?
Well, we have physicians that have had the regular medical school and residency training. We have primarily family practitioners so that they can treat people of all ages, but we've had internists in the past. Typically, there isn't a homeless concentration or anything special that you take when you go to school. It's more that you have a desire to help people that maybe other people don't want to help, that you want to give back to the community, that and we have a test to hire people, we call it. The first is a claustrophobia test. So you have to go onto the mobile clinic and imagine it full of a lot of big adults and or a lot of children jumping up and down and screaming and getting shots. And can you function in this small space and feel comfortable, because you are very close to both the rest of the staff and all of the patients, and it's just a bus-sized vehicle. So that's the claustrophobia test. And then the other test has to do with, can you feel comfortable parking your car, say, at the bridge or at the stew pot and walking into the clinic? Are you comfortable with this, or are you afraid? And it's not the right choice for everybody. And so we want to make sure that people are comfortable. And then once they start with us, we spend a lot of time talking about a variety of issues that you don't learn in medical school. One of the first things that I learned as a new physician doing homeless medicine is that sometimes people don't do what I think they're gonna do. So I had a mother whose child I thought for sure had pneumonia, but I had learned in medical school that if you want to make the diagnosis of pneumonia, you get a chest x-ray. So I told the mother, I'm really concerned about your child that has a fever, I think he has pneumonia, and can you take him out to Children's and get a chest x-ray? And she said, no problem. And I was like, you're going to take him out tonight, you're going to do it tonight, no problem. And so I saw her 3 days later, and she brought the same child back, and she had not gone out to Children's, and she had not gotten a chest x-ray, and her child was worse. And so what I learned from that is that even with the best intentions, things happen. People can't do what they think they are gonna do, and so I need to do as much as I possibly can when I can. So now if I think a child has pneumonia, they'll get the antibiotics right there and then.
One of the things that I think is really, really important for anybody is to not only have the ability to change, but the know-how. There are a lot of things we talked about today that I have no knowledge of. Cholesterol, why is it important? You talk about just routine checkups. As a homeless individual, I really, really need these things. And I don't know why I don't do these things. These things are very, very important. And, you know, I seem fairly lucid, but what about the guy who's not? What about the individuals who don't think about that? They only know, oh, my kidneys are hurting. Maybe I need to drink water. I want to say thank you, Dr. Spaulding, for coming. It's been an amazing journey today. You have given us so much insight on the topic of health. As a homeless individual, I'm so appreciative of your effort and your energy. Thanks for coming out. Shout out to Parkland for having somebody like yourself.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Street View. You can visit us online at streetviewpodcast.com. Tune us in again next time for more discussion.